This podcast was recorded in the podcast studio at the Great Room Afro-Asia in Singapore. Welcome to Greater Encounters by the Great Room, the podcast series where great minds meet and where curiosity meets knowledge. Let's dive right in. Hello and welcome to the Greater Encounters podcast. I'm Pooja Barwani, the guest host for this podcast series. Joining me today is Greater guest speaker, Fritjof Berger. He is the co-founder and CBO of Antler, a global early stage VC firm, investing with a people first approach. Welcome, Fritjof. So great to have you here and see you. I want to start by, you know, you telling the audience a little bit about Antler, its philosophy, and then go into your story of how you became the co-founder of Antler.
Sure. Excited to talk about what we've been up to since 2018 when we really got started. And what Antler is, the investor that really tries to be there for founders from day zero. And what does that really mean? It means that we want to be able to back people who have perhaps a very early idea or no idea at all, or people looking for co-founders, or people just looking to work in a community at that very beginning when it's quite lonely. There's a lot of support, a lot of venture capital in different ecosystems around the world, but really going from that zero to one, having nothing to having something and having a bit of traction is an incredibly lonely journey at times. So what we've developed with Antler is what's now on a global scale, a real community and a place for very ambitious people to get started on building their next companies.
Yes, I think what is so unique of what you just said is that you come in pre-idea and pre-team. Tell us a little bit about how you help your founders find the right match.
So a big part of people joining Antler and choosing to spend their time in this community is to meet and engage with other co-founders. The way it works is that people join these residency programs for a few months at a time, whether it's here in Singapore or in London or Oslo or New York. We're now in 25 different cities globally across six continents. And for people who join and jumps into this community, they are able to meet typically between 80 to 100 people who are looking to do exactly the same thing. Either convince others to join their idea or to get convinced by others to join their ideas. And the great thing about working for around 2 to 3 months together in this same community is that you are really getting to spend time with people before you fully commit. Perhaps you work a couple of weeks with one team or one person and you realize that you might be great friends, but you're not really thinking about the business the same way. Mm-hmm. You can then pivot and meet other people. And it's almost like taking your own network where maybe you have 5, 10, 15 people, if you're lucky, who are brilliant, and you're suddenly amplifying that to 100 people who all have made this choice that I will build a company in the coming weeks or months.
So it's like putting people together who have a very common goal and they're like similar, like-minded, to meet, to date, you could say, and try it out. It's kind of an open forum. Typically, how long does it take for a team to be built and how many times should you break up and make up? Is there sort of a science and art to it now that you guys have done this for so many years?
It's a fair question to ask now that we've been doing this with more than 5,000 founders and more than 650 companies have come out of this residency program setup. I will say that there is no one size fits all, but I can say that a lot of teams form quite early. Then there's more of sort of a steady approach of more and more teams being formed as you get through these 2 to 3 months. There's no right answer on how many times should you kind of break up, but what we do encourage people to do is to really spend the first couple of weeks to get to know as many people as possible. There is a tendency, I think, in any community to immediately go for people that are similar to you, right? Maybe you have the same background, maybe you were living in the same country, and just like you're joining a new university or a new job, you can stick to them. Mm. And it's very important there that we are a bit through this programmatic fashion trying to get people into different groups for the first 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah. Once that has been taking place, it's a lot easier for you to make a more informed decision that I've actually talked to most people in this group.
Right.
I now feel that person A, B or C is probably the person that I want to build with or the people that I want to build with.
Nice. It's like engineered or structured, the whole matchmaking and the meeting process. As someone who's witnessed it, I think it's very well done. So, and you know, from the early days of ideating, tell us how you became involved in such a high level because you are a co-founder. What was it about the idea that convinced you?
I think that what got me very excited about what ended up becoming Antler was really the impact that we would have, the real energy I get getting out of bed every morning trying to work on this. And it's really because at the core, we're trying to create the best possible starting point for brilliant people who want to change the world, and ideally also lower the barriers for people to start companies. Typically, startups fail because they're running out of capital, or they don't have the right team, or there's no real market need for what they're building. And you can't, of course, mitigate all of this 100% of the time, but you can really reduce the chance of some of these things happening by, for example, creating a founder community where you can meet co-founders, by, for example, getting early access to funding, or by having access to a lot of expertise around you. So the vision of what we wanted to create is really what got me excited about this idea. And when we were really sketching out what this could look like, I think that purpose of what this could become was really the driving engine. And I think that's also what's been the core reason why we've been able to attract so many brilliant people around the world to help us build together with the co-founder team.
Nice. And since you've launched, you now have what, 20 plus locations in all the major ecosystems in the world. What was it like scaling at this rapid pace? And also through the pandemic, you've kind of like broken every barrier and been able to almost create a playbook. Like, there is an Antler everywhere.
It was busy. Busy is the first word that I will say looking back at this rapid scale. But I will also say that we got better and better at it. So Singapore was our first location, and I think that we learned a lot about how to provide more value to founders. We were really actively asking for feedback and getting a lot of good insights from the other side of the table. When we then brought it to a number of new locations, Stockholm, London, New York, a couple of the early expansion places, we already knew a lot more. And now when we recently, for example, launched in Sao Paulo or Tokyo or Seoul, that's, you know, after having been in more than 20 places. So the learning journey or the learning cycle becomes very rapid. You need to be quite structured in playbooking everything and then being honest with yourself and getting feedback from people who participate. But if you're doing that, I think you can get into a better and better playbook. So I think we've done that quite successfully. But the real key, I guess, secret or key ingredient is really to find the right people on the ground to lead each new ecosystem. And that can take a really long time. And that's typically what happens before, obviously, we start building the team and getting an office and everything. That's a journey that can take anything from 3 to 12 months, sometimes even more. Mm. So a lot of what we're doing behind the scenes is to continuously talk to talent, not just founders that we want to back, but also people that we want to bring in to help back more founders.
It's really like, you know, like I said from the start, it's a people first, people led approach, and you really do your due diligence when it comes to that. And what have been some of the major challenges, besides finding the right people, I would say, you faced, and how have you overcome them?
I think the pandemic was a challenge to any company, probably a few exceptions out there that I can't think of, but that was obviously for us as well a challenge. And the main challenge was that a lot of what we do, and I think a lot of the magic that happens, happens in person. So suddenly you had to, in different markets at different times, you had to do things virtually. In many markets, you had to do sort of a hybrid approach for a while or smaller groups. So adjusting our value proposition to still be beneficial to founders was very important to get right. I think also, like any company, that was, you know, our customer in this case being the founders, that was priority number one. I think what's easy to forget in that focus on priority number one is priority number two, which is obviously the team, right? Which has to do all these changes. And I think that we handled the first one well. I think we've also done quite well on number two, but it's really hard to assess and check in with people when it's a lockdown going on.
And of course,
there is a lot of meetings in smaller groups across Antler globally. But naturally, when that was not possible, I think you will start missing signals or being too late to sort of check in on someone. So I think any leader during those 2 years have experienced that. And that was probably, to me, the biggest challenge. I think we handled quite well the founders, but learned a lot about how you can check in more with people when you're decentralized during a time like a pandemic.
Okay, this question isn't in the thing, but I'm going to ask you, it's about you. So as a leader, what did you learn about yourself during this period and managing through this crisis?
I think I learned the importance of being around people for myself. So I get a lot of energy by being around people. I probably didn't realize it at the time, but I probably got very low energy without seeing it myself during portions of the pandemic. And immediately when I was out with people, I felt that energy come back. I also think that I'm more efficient as a leader. I think probably most are when you're able to be with the team, at least during parts of the year. So a lot of my leadership style and operation setup is really to be visiting different offices a few times per year and spending time having kind of intense workshops. But I think that works well. It's not like everything needs to be day to day, 5 days a week, sitting next to each other. It's great when you have that setup, but I think these spaced out intense times together also can create those personal bonds and be able to check in with each other. So
absolutely.
I think I learned what gives me energy probably more than I foresaw before this pandemic.
Yes, I think we all learned a lot about ourselves during this period. So the next topic I want to talk to you about is diversity and women in VC. You know, the problem is the statistics. They're just woefully low, women founders and women in VC. The numbers are 12% of decision makers at VC firms are women, 65% of firms globally still do not have a single female partner, according to a report last year. And as far as startups with at least one female founder, the number is now at 20%, but the gap remains because even if you are a female founder of a startup, you don't get funding because teams that have only one female founder have only secured 2% of funding. You're someone in a unique position that has both sides, and you know, you have the VC side, you see founders all the time. Why do you think these numbers are so low and they're taking so long to move? And how and what can be done to make this industry more diverse?
I think there are a few different reasons. One being that the VC industry, at least historically, has been quite homogeneous, right? And can tend to happen, if I'm simplifying a bit, is that a person with some traits, let's say you're a computer scientist from Stanford and you're a white male on the west coast of the US, naturally, I think a lot of people in your ecosystem will have the same characteristics as you, and you will perhaps then start investing your capital into people like yourself, and that cycle sort of keeps going. So it becomes a very closed loop of people and backgrounds being invested in. I think that's been historically a bit of the cause of these very skewed metrics. I think that the other element is that it's quite hard to start a company. It's not the easiest journey to combine with family or having children or other commitments. So that's also probably been, at least in more the historical startup culture, a bit of a barrier for some people to pursue these opportunities. And I think perhaps thirdly, a lot of the VC capital, perhaps unrelated from the fact that more men have created those companies, but it's been very focused on certain types of businesses. For example, SaaS companies have been great the last couple of decades, and it's been into certain niches where perhaps there was vast overweight of men. So luckily, I think all of those things can be mitigated going forward. I think having just people with diverse backgrounds as VCs, it's always weird to use the word diverse with women, is obviously the biggest part of our population. But having diverse VCs, because they will again have networks of people who are more like them, that's very important to get the capital element flowing. I think too, on how to work as a VC, there's a lot to be said around culture. And I actually think that if you are a founder of a startup, you can form that culture, and it doesn't have to be the way that all startups have sort of been glamorized in the early days.
It doesn't have to be startup hustle culture.
It doesn't have to be hustle culture. I think any startup has to work hard, but you can really dictate culture and the way of working in your team, right? So I actually think that for people with other commitments in their day-to-day life, it's a lot of opportunity to form your own ideal working style. And the third one is, by having more diverse founders and more diversity among VCs, you are starting to open up investments into more diverse problem sets and a wider range of challenges being addressed. This is also helped by the world being more global, and you're backing startups. Many VCs are backing startups now in Europe and Asia, obviously, not just sort of the west coast of the US.
Yeah.
So a lot has changed in the last years and at least the last decades. But as you're saying, the numbers are still very skewed. So there's a lot to be done there. And at least I'm happy that Antler is playing some part in moving the needle in the right direction.
Do you want to share the numbers of Antler in terms of how many female founders you all have and also VC partners?
Yes, so happy to do that. In Antler, we have roughly a third of the portfolio companies that we backed have at least one women co-founder. So in Antler, we have at least one women co-founder in at least a third of our startups that we have backed. It's a lot higher than most industry metrics. And I think that it might have to do with the fact that you can get into a community and get support and get in touch with other co-founders from an earlier stage. You have to be able to jump into it and dedicate yourself, but suddenly you get access to a bigger network of people who are like-minded, and it's not like you can only start if you know these co-founders from before.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps that has part of the reason in it. When it comes to our team side, roughly a third of the leadership are women as well. And I think it is incredibly important for attracting women entrepreneurs, but also to look at business opportunities and investment decisions from different angles, right? I've seen that happen, you know, that people think very similarly about different topics. And if you're not getting a diverse group of people in the investment committee, you risk losing out on very important insight when you're making that decision.
Absolutely, especially when it's women-centric products. And, you know, there's so much in wellness and femtech that's coming up. So, you know, you've dealt with so many founders, built Antler over the years to where it is today, a global brand that is so distinct with what the offering is. And we are indeed living in interesting times. There's so much happening. What advice would you give entrepreneurs who are considering building at this present time?
Perhaps I will give two pieces of advice. One would be to try to block out all the noise. I think the media is always very good at saying this is the best time ever to do something or this is the worst time ever. The fact of the matter is that things always move in cycles, right? There's good times to get funding. There's more challenging times to get funding. There's breakthroughs in technologies. If you're really finding purpose in what you're building and if you don't have a 1 to 2 year time frame, you shouldn't really care all too much about what's happening right in front of you. The second thing I will say is most radical disruption typically comes from people who have not spent decades in that industry, really deep in that industry. I think you look at Elon Musk with cars or SpaceX, for example. Obviously a brilliant guy, but didn't really grow up or come from those industries. Now, what does that tell you? It means that you should always try to learn and get advice from people, but you shouldn't weigh too heavily the advice you're getting from industry experts, because they will probably look at it from a quite limited lens and not look at what's possible, but rather look at what's not possible. And I think when we were starting out Antler, I think that's some of the learnings we drew, that people who had been doing a lot of venture investing early on said that no way you can do what you're trying to do and scale and become this most active early stage investor at the very early stages in such a short amount of time. And I think it's valid input and you need to take it into consideration, but you shouldn't limit your own dreams and ambitions from people who look at it and think that it's not possible.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because basically you can only think outside the box if you are outside the box. So that's pretty much what you just said. And when you think about it, besides Elon Musk, you have even founders of Canva, like when they first started and they took so many years to raise their first VC funding and look where they are today. So that's fantastic advice. Okay, last part. Let's pick and let's do these questions. I'll pick the question, read it out. I'll answer first and then you answer. Okay. What title would you give this chapter in your life? For me, Startup Auntie.
I will say scaling.
What leadership quality is essential yet often underrated? Humility.
Yeah, I'm going to say empathy.
Okay. What was the one major turning point in your life that brought you to where you are today? I'm going to actually say getting a gig at Antler.
Thank you. I think to me, that turning point was probably my MBA. So I did an MBA at Harvard Business School. And the reason why that was a turning point was all these speakers and guests who came in and talked about things in a very ambitious and scalable fashion. So they had really changed the world with some of their companies and organizations. Coming from Norway and not always thinking that big, thinking that maybe you'll do something in the Nordics if you're doing something big. This was just a different scale, and that was a key element in my, you know, decision to really jump all into what eventually became Antler and trying to build something that is truly global and really impactful.
Awesome. And final question, what is currently keeping you up at night? You go first and then I'll answer.
I think I've gotten a lot better at turning off work, and I'm very happy with life in general. But of course, on the occasion that I do stay up at night and struggle to fall asleep, I think it has to do with something in the business that you want to solve or fix. And it's definitely important. I always encourage people to be starting companies and be entrepreneurs, but it's a very different thing from being an employee, right? You struggle to really put it away. You can reduce that risk of staying up at night, but it will just happen from time to time. And if it happens too often, obviously you need to make some changes, but that's a bit part of what you sign up to.
Yeah, well, I think there are a number of things that keep me up at night. I, like you, have become a lot better at compartmentalizing and having boundaries in my day. But it's usually sometimes the ideas come at night. And I think in that stillness and boredom is when you're, when sometimes you're like, okay, I can do this. So yeah, besides my startup and my kids, I don't think anything else keeps me up at night. I usually get a good night's rest because I work so hard in the day.
That's also a good good strategy. Yeah.
So, Fishov, that was a great conversation. Thank you so much for being on the Greater Podcast. And we wish you all the best with the scaling phase of your life.
Thank you, Pujan. Thanks for having me and really excited to follow your journey as well.
Awesome. So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you, Fristjof, for joining us and sharing so much wisdom and giving us such insightful tips on how to build during this very interesting time. If you would like to learn more about Greater, all information and links can be found in the podcast description. Thanks for listening to Greater Encounters.
You've just listened to the Greater Encounters podcast. This episode was produced, recorded, and edited by the team behind The Great Room. The Great Room by Industrious is co-working inspired by hospitality. With locations worldwide spanning across APAC, North America, and Europe, it is recognized as one of America's 500 fastest-growing companies by Inc. magazine. The Great Room offers hyper-flexible workspace solutions to support a variety of unique office needs. Through community events and experiences designed to cultivate connections and amplify professional learning and development, we change the way you feel about coming to work. Greater Business Club by The Great Room is a next-generation business club for leaders building leaders. We facilitate an ecosystem of learning, collaboration, connection, and giving back. For more information on The Great Room, or if you would like to join the Greater Business Club community, head over to www.thegreatroom.co. If you would like to listen to more episodes, follow us on LinkedIn at Greater Business Club. That's where we'll share exciting news about our next episode releases and much more. Until our next encounter, be greater.